Get ready for 90 minutes of fun and excitement for our roundtable panel this morning. It's great music. Thank you, Rob. I like that. Good morning. Welcome to the roundtable. I'm Joe Donahue. Very nice to have you with us on this Monday morning. It is the 3rd of October. And let me introduce our panel to you, and then we will get to it because we have a lot to discuss over the next hour and a half. And there are a lot of issues, and I'm sure there'll be a lot of mail, and it's going to all be good stuff. Let us begin with Teresa Bourgeois, who is a communications consultant, has had an amazing career in national, local, and state politics, and it is a delight to have you back on the program.
Delighted to be here. Thank you.
Thank you very much for being with us. Mike Spain is here. He is the associate editor of the Times Union newspaper. Good morning, Michael.
Good morning.
Very nice to have you with us. Rich Honan is a corporate attorney. Rich, good morning. Happy New Year. Nice to have you here.
Shana Tova.
Thank you very much. Very nice. thank you for being such a good Jew. You're here.
Yes, right. Exactly.
We appreciate that. Yeah. Thank you.
Thanks for pointing out the inconsistency.
we're very thankful to have our panel. Alan is being good, so he's off today. Okay. So, but we'll be back tomorrow. But thank you.
For which we are all thankful.
That he will be back tomorrow, yes. Indeed. So, all
yes,
right.
Let's, that's what I meant.
That's, let's get to it and go to the topics at large. Well, I don't know if you heard about this or not, but the New York Times, is this the October surprise? Julian Assange says no, but is this the October surprise? Apparently, the New York Times was mailed, and we'll get into the particulars of this a
little
bit later on.
That's a fun story by itself.
Right. We'll get into that later on. But let's get to the crux of the issue here, and that was the New York Times was mailed 3 pages of a 1995 tax return from Donald Trump. Now, in this information that I have to say, at least Rich may disagree with me on this, but at least in their reporting of it, it seems like they did a very thorough job as far as finding as much information out about those 3 pages that could be found out and what they ultimately meant. What we do know, now remember, Donald Trump thus far has not released his tax returns.
Unlike any previous presidential
candidate for the past 40 years, right? Yep. So Donald Trump declared a $916 million loss on his 1995 income tax returns, a tax deduction so substantial it could have allowed him to legally avoid paying any federal income tax for up to 18 years, according to records obtained by the New York Times. The 1995 tax records never before disclosed reveal the extraordinary tax benefits that Mr. Trump, the Republican presidential nominee, derived from the financial wreckage he left behind in the early 1990s through mismanagement of 3 Atlantic City casinos.
Nothing pejorative about that paragraph, by the way.
Okay, I understand.
It's true.
I understand
wreckage.
That. Okay.
Wreckage.
But
okay.
It's almost $1 billion in losses. How else would you describe that
just
kind
say,
of business
time,
loss?
Isn't that bad?
The economy was good.
The economy was booming. It was 1995. It was the mid-90s. The economy was booming.
We were all happy then.
Except for the people in Atlantic City who lost right. their jobs and all of the vendors he didn't pay. They were not that happy.
His ill-fated foray into the airline business and his ill-timed purchase of the Plaza Motel.
Hotel,
yeah. It's now he made it into a motel.
Yeah, it started out as an elite hotel.
Started out as a beautiful hotel, but ended up being a motel. Tax experts hired by the Times to analyze his records said that the tax rules, especially advantageous to wealthy filers, would have allowed Mr. Trump to use his $916 million loss to cancel out an equivalent amount of taxable income. Okay, so there is that part of the story. Then there was the reaction. The reaction was immediately from Donald Trump and from his tweets saying that he did not dispute the information that came forth. He did not say that it was wrong. He did take the Times to task and apparently was looking to sue the Times over the release of the information and saying that it was illegally obtained. Also, then on Sunday, yesterday, the surrogates were out. Both Chris Christie and Rudy Giuliani were out, and they were talking about how this shows that Donald Trump is a genius because he was able to work the system in his favor for that time, and that shows how he could use the tax laws to the advantage of the American people. Who would like to begin?
Well, I just want to say that he was able, his very, very good tax accountant was able to leverage the laws, which are extremely favorable to wealthy real estate developers. Now, not every real estate person is making a lot of money, but it lets you write off all kinds of things, and then by balancing your income and averaging your income over a period of years, you can come out way ahead. So interesting that during the debate last week, Donald Trump had with Hillary Clinton, his Democratic opponent, they talked about taxes. Donald Trump would like to tighten up the situation that lets hedge fund managers get away with only paying 15% of their income, while most people, you and I, might pay something closer to 30%. And that's great that he's going after hedge fund managers, but he doesn't propose anything to change the extraordinarily favorable tax rules for his profession that made him lots of money. We don't know how much money, actually. Maybe it didn't make him that much money. And, as Alan would call it if he was here, it's chutzpah. Chutzpah.
Thank you. So the issue here, too, is that, and Rich, maybe you can take a crack at this just so we can understand, but how does it work that you take such a loss in your professional business of $916 million and how that affects your personal income tax?
Well, that's my first question, and I haven't seen the return. When the IRS releases, when the New York Times releases the rest of the return.
Oh, they don't have it. All they have is three pages. One is the Connecticut filing, one is the New York State filing, the other is the New Jersey.
Well, when the IRS gets the rest of it to them, then we'll be able to review to review the rest of it. So I don't know. This was his personal return. This was not one of the corporate returns.
Personal return.
And so the net operating loss carry forward rules, by the way, are have been in substantial play, and that's true. Especially back in '95, there were actually markets in net operating losses, and they are, not to get into a big tax discussion, but they are just what they sound like. If you lose enough money over a course of years, and you could carry forward those losses to offset your income for, I don't think it's 20 years. I actually think it's 15 years.
It's 15.
Okay, and
we go back three though.
Three back.
Yeah, three back, 15 mm-hmm. forward. And they're actually in the 90s. There were tons of deals where people were buying companies just to buy the net operating loss carry forward. So if you had a profitable company, you'd basically try and buy an unprofitable company, take the losses, and then be able to
offset
your
income. Maybe that's why he bought the Plaza Hotel.
Who knows? Real estate is real estate in some ways is kind of the holy grail of tax havens, because the whole idea, the best thing you could ever do from a tax standpoint is to actually be able to deduct more money than you actually spend. You know, usually the rest of us, we pay our mortgage, what we pay on our mortgage, we can deduct it, and we consider that pretty good. But real estate and other types of investments, sometimes you could actually deduct more money than you actually went out of pocket to pay. Anyway, that's the tax background. So that's how the original question was, how does he take that on his personal return? It would have to do with how he owned the businesses in question. In other words, was he the sole shareholder, for example? I don't know any of that, but that's where it comes from.
Teresa?
One of the things that Giuliani was saying, and they kept saying, well, he had a fiduciary responsibility to take all of these, but on his personal income taxes, I'm not a lawyer, but does he have a fiduciary responsibility if it's his personal income taxes?
Let's ask the lawyer.
Again, I'm guessing. What I'm guessing Giuliani was talking about, okay?
The political consultant and the lawyer walked into a radio station.
Yeah, right. Yeah, and I'm guessing. And by the way, personally, I would have spun it differently, obviously. I would, but whatever. They kind of jumped.
Well, they were fed certain lines to deliver.
They clearly were talking off talking points because they said exactly the three or four.
Yeah, no, they do, and I mean that's the game. But I personally would have gone differently. But I think what Giuliani was talking about was saying, if Trump was a majority shareholder of these businesses, the majority shareholders owe a fiduciary duty to the minority shareholders to, you know, either make the most money or just do the best you can. And so I think the argument I'm guessing they were trying to make was he had an obligation to, you know, make the corporation as profitable as possible or to maximize the tax benefits. I haven't seen the documents.
I think on this, there's no discussion that it's what he did is not legal. I think the question is, what does it say about him when his, you know, one of fundamental reasons that he says he's the right person to lead is his business ability and what
and
he,
that's where the polls show him
the
being
country.
The most favored.
Yeah. Right. Is his ability to be a very good business person. And there are a whole series of things that have come out, these taxes, the foundation, the issues with his foundation and how that has been used, a whole series of things that raise that question. How come in the mid-90s, when the economy was doing so well, you know, how come he lost $916 million? And think about what happened with those losses. Think about all the stories of the vendors who he did not pay, who the workers who lost their jobs, the effect that had on a whole host of people, and will he do for the country as president what he did, you know, that leave.
So what we don't know, of course, is that we know, as the Times points out in the article, that according to their version of the law, or their interpretation of the tax law, that he would have been able to make near $50 million for 18 years without having to pay any federal income tax on that money that was coming in. We do not know, because we don't have the returns, if that was actually the case. I think we could assume that it probably was, if you were going to go to the extent.
Well, some of the years. He certainly indicated that during the debate, that there was an application for a casino license where he had to submit some of his tax figures, and that was obtained by another media. And that showed that in those years he didn't pay taxes. So it was certainly some of the years he was able to avoid taxes.
Yeah, I think they were just dividing. I think they were just taking that number and dividing it by the maximum amount of years that you're allowed to carry it forward.
Well, because he hasn't disclosed. I mean, there's David K. Johnston, the journalist, has done a lot of work on this, and there's no evidence that he's paid taxes since the 70s. It's not said that he hasn't, but because he's refused to disclose. And then what does that say? You know, he says, and he's right, this country needs a lot of work on infrastructure. You know, we need to do better with our veterans. There's a whole host of things that need to be done in this country. And what happens if he doesn't pay his fair share? That means, you know, that tax burden goes on to others, which is typically the working class people end up paying their share and part of his. And what are the implications if people don't pay their fair share of taxes?
So I will ask all of you this question, and I'll start with you, Teresa. But how big of a political deal do you believe this is for Donald Trump, given that what he has done seems to be perfectly legal?
I think it's perfectly legal, but I think that if he wasn't worried about the public reaction to his taxes, he would have released them a long time ago, or some version of them. Obviously, there has been a reason for a long time that he's chosen not to release his taxes. And I think that his constituency, working class people who have economically challenged, you know, facing tough economic times, I think that for them, this in combination with how he used his foundation with charities and a lot of questions about that, how he treated his vendors, not paying them what he owed them. I think there's a compounding factor here that he might not have, you know, it appears that, you know, he does not treat working people, the people who he needs to come and vote for him, that well. And I think that this is a piece of a larger issue that, you know, will not reflect well for the people he's trying to get to vote for him.
Well, I think you're making a little bit of a referential leap from that he takes full advantage of the tax laws and the legalities of running a business to that somehow becomes a disadvantage to the, quote, working man. You know, you made the point, Teresa, that he did not disclose, and the answer is he did disclose. He disclosed everything he was supposed to disclose under the federal election disclosure laws. He chose not to disclose the tax returns. You could argue about the strategy of that. I'm sure one of the arguments, if I was advising him, one of the arguments I would make in supporting the audit was, no matter what happens, the minute you come out with a number this big, we are never going to be able to get a deal with the IRS because the political pressure on the IRS will be to pin you to the wall, and we know that the Democrats run the IRS.
Okay, but if you don't know we don't know yet that he's under audit, because he says he's under audit, but he's not released his IRS audit letter yet, and he's been asked over and over again, and they are not answering that question of why he won't. If you, as my understanding, you would know this better than me, but if you're under audit with the IRS, you have an audit letter.
You get a lot of letters, yeah.
And he has been asked, the campaign has been asked to release the audit letter to prove that he in fact is under audit by the IRS, and they've not released that letter yet. So we assume he's under audit because he says it, but we don't know that to be true. But also, you know, on the issue of vendors, there's been story after story after story that he has not paid his vendors
or not paid them in full. That's his MO, sure.
And that is... I think those kinds of things create what he did here appears to be legal in terms of paying his taxes or not paying his taxes. But I think it reflects how he treats work. But I think the vendor issue of not paying his vendors or at least full value, there's just countless stories of cases.
Well, I think that it's going to give more traction to this issue for Hillary Clinton. It's going to focus on the whole idea of his business acumen and his ability to run the country and make the economy better if he's using gimmicks and using legitimate, you know, legitimate is one word, but legal is another. And it's also going to focus on his own tax proposals. Yeah. She's proposing closing some of these loopholes that made him wealthy and allowed him to escape paying what I think many reasonable people would say would be his fair share of taxes.
Yeah, I'm not aware of her actually making any proposal with respect to net operating loss carryovers, and I'd be surprised if she did, given you know the demographics of where her money comes from. You know, the George Soroses and Warren Buffetts of the world, you know, enjoy all of the same tax benefits and probably pay taxes at a far lower rate than the four of us in this room.
Admits that he does and says that he should be paying a tax at the same rate as his secretary.
Yeah, he's free to do that if you want. Yeah. I think he was invited to go ahead and do that, but
right,
he declined
right.
that invitation.
But it doesn't change the law and doesn't change the...
It doesn't change...
Donald Trump says the system is rigged. Well, it looks like it's rigged against the middle class when you look at tax rules and laws like this that favor him.
About 30
and people
seconds.
Like
yeah,
I don't think anybody. I don't think anybody disagrees with that. You know, I'd point out. I think the system is rigged, but the fact that you want to now go and change that system, that shouldn't work against you. I'd also point out that remember, 45% of the people in the United States don't pay any income taxes at all.
But so is he the right person to them. Change it? That's the question.
All right, so we'll leave it there. We'll be right back. We'll take a quick news break. You're listening to the Roundtable on WAMC. Good morning. Welcome back to the Roundtable panel. Teresa Bourgeois, Mike Spain, and Rich Honan, our guests this morning. And we thank you very much for being with us. I have to say, I think our panelists were unaware that we went away to break because they just kept going. When we, even though the mics were off, we had a very vigorous conversation. I don't know if that's allowed on in here, but thanks.
Okay. I'd like to see what CNN is saying versus what Fox News is saying.
Okay, thanks. So welcome back, and let's get to some letters, and then we'll continue with this issue a little bit as we work through the letters. Kevin says that, is anyone on the panel actually proposing that any American should pay more in taxes than they legally owe? I doubt it. If you don't like the tax code, vote in a different Congress. Rich is nodding.
Well, I think I agree with Kevin. The way to do this is by changing the Congress. The president really won't have a lot of success unless he's got a Congress behind him or she has a Congress behind her.
There actually is a group. It's called Responsible Wealth. It's a group of wealthy Americans who do believe that there are problems with the tax code that ultimately even though they would pay more, they think, for their businesses, because of the benefit of taxes that deal with infrastructure and schools and such, that they would benefit from a more equitable tax system. So there are, in fact, some people who are quite wealthy who do think that you should have a more equitable tax system.
Well, I think everybody across the board thinks we should have more equitable. Whether I think a lot of people believe that that doesn't necessarily mean they'd be paying more, but that the money would be collected in a more fair way. You know, the funnel would be more fair, and then of course on the other side that the spending would be more, a little bit more.
And what this responsible. Really what this really raises is who's the right person to fix this problem, and is it.
Is that really the issue, though? I mean, it seems to me this is more an issue of character and, I mean, the way this is coming out in the campaign.
You mean that he had the temerity to actually use the U.S. tax laws to his benefit?
No, I think more to the point that he is refusing to release any information. This information was released, and then we are left to just sort of extrapolate from three pages of tax returns from 1995.
Well, that's true. You know, it's funny. Did you see in the transcript of what Hillary said about this to Goldman Sachs when she spoke to them?
What did she say?
The answer is we don't know. Because she didn't release any of those transcripts that we've been talking about since the beginning of the campaign.
But we do know what her tax proposals are.
Oh, and we sure know that.
We know what she paid in taxes in 1995 because she released those taxes.
Well, her husband had been I mean, their taxes are going to be public, you know, forever.
Presidential candidate.
Since 1913, since whenever we had taxes, released
the transcripts of the speeches that they gave.
I don't know. Have they?
There's a history with tax returns. There is not.
I don't know that any presidential candidate has given speeches or had a spouse giving speeches at the numbers that Hillary has while she was a sitting Secretary of State. But
that's not the same thing. It is not the same thing as not releasing your taxes. Every president back to Nixon has released. Even Nixon, who was under audit, released his taxes.
But Nixon bragged about how little money he had, right?
Yeah. I mean, well, he wasn't paying. I mean, he didn't pay 1 year. He gave away all his papers 1 year.
But, what don't we know about his business partnerships that we might need to know, particularly with foreign entities?
Well, first of all,
I'm sorry to interrupt you, but just to further piggyback on what Teresa was just saying, I mean, don't you think that if he wasn't hiding something, if there wasn't something there that he feel could be devastating to him, that he would release the taxes?
First of all, I'm sure this was the same thing as Mitt Romney. I mean, look, there was a
Mitt Romney paid 15%. Right?
Yeah, but and he
and
didn't
release the taxes.
And
after all, but not
the
not he ultimately right. He ultimately released them because there's the whole fear in this country of, again, I'll use the word again. If you have the temerity in this country to actually make a lot of money, for some reason you feel like I really got to hide that.
But Rich brags all the time about how he is a billionaire and how he makes lots of money and how he's a great businessman. Revealing his taxes would let you see whether he really is that good a businessman.
Well, listen, whether or not strategically, politically, it would be helpful to do that. You know, I'll leave that to the talking heads. I personally,
well, we're talking.
Yeah,
heads.
That's us.
So answer your own question.
So
haven't you looked at your new business cards?
In light of if you are a Republican candidate for president and you are in negotiations with the IRS, which has demonstrated.
We don't know that he's in negotiations with the IRS.
He claims he is, but he hasn't provided any evidence.
So we're actually saying there's no audit at all?
We don't know if there is or is not.
And we don't think that the world would know this by now. We don't think that the IRS would have found a way to get this to the Clinton campaign the same way.
Well, the New York Times continues to check their mailboxes. Right. So we'll find out.
All he has to do is release his audit letter. The question is, why wouldn't he release the audit letter?
Well, first of all, that's a substantive letter with numbers and issues in it. I would not do that.
I think, again, the bigger issue is this is a part of a larger pattern of his behavior. You know, what we learned recently from good reporting in Newsweek about his investments in Cuba, despite the embargo. And despite speaking about how important it is to uphold the embargo. So at the same time, he was saying it's imperative to uphold this embargo. He had his people in Cuba, which by all accounts.
Looking for business opportunities.
Looking for business opportunities.
Was that illegal?
Yes.
Yes.
It violated the U.S. law that barred U.S. businesses from doing business in Cuba.
I thought that they were looking for opportunities.
He actually spent money, and to spend money on it violates the law. He spent $68,000.
So it wasn't a lot of money, but he did it. And he did it at the same time publicly. He was saying you shouldn't do it.
And that to me doesn't come close to the sitting secretary.
Oh, everything's equivocating.
Millions of dollars from companies that she's doing business and with and countries
Let me get to some letters.
But that was legal, Rich. I'm not convinced
that what the Clinton Global Initiative was doing was in fact legal. Mm-hmm. And the fact that five people had to get immunity in the course of that discussion makes me wonder whether that was not. You're conflating two things. Because what was in those emails were deletions that had to do with conversations with Clinton.
Isn't it standard that a good lawyer would get immunity in that circumstance?
They weren't going after these people. They were going after her. They really needed. I mean,
what they determined is she did not do anything illegal. But want to go back to the
Deanne says, yeah. The thing about Rich is that he defends Trump as if he were his client. Also, everything Trump says he will do is not backed up by any proof from the past. We also got this from Stacy, who says it's more likely that Trump's not as successful as he claims. Has Rudy Giuliani lost his mind calling Trump a genius? God help us. We also got this from Richard, who says Donald Trump not having to pay any federal taxes for nearly 20 years, despite the fact that he is supposedly a billionaire, will alienate at least some of his supporters, especially those few Bernie Sanders supporters who have thrown their support behind Trump. This behavior by Trump is the epitome of what Sanders has been railing against throughout his campaign. Jerome makes comments regarding Hillary Clinton's Goldman Sachs speech. They paid her $600,000 for the speech. I figure they own it. Ask them what she said. Rich is the subject line of Bobby's letter. Sorry, Rich, you're sinking today. You go, Teresa. We got this from Brian, who says, I'm 27 and I'd love to see the tax laws rewritten. The government needed to drastically increase revenue for World War II in order to fund British and Russia while we spent our military in North Africa and Southern Italy. Those were Democrats. The Republicans have done nothing for the past 6 years while they have controlled the legislative body. I think it's strange to imagine the tax code to change after a presidential election. Andrew says, for taking on that lawyer's silly arguments, thank you, Teresa. Lisa says, it's legal. Let's move on. What does Hillary Clinton have to offer progressives other than her attacks and scheming research on other candidates? Anyone want to take that?
Teresa?
What does
she have to offer progressives other than her attacks and scheming research on other candidates, including attacks on Bernie Sanders and his supporters during the primary? The New York Times was also biased against Bernie Sanders during the Democratic primary season.
Well, let's just talk about the last few days. Wasn't she recently in New Hampshire with Bernie Sanders talking about making college more affordable to more people? On Friday, this got lost in the midst of Trump's 3 a.m. tweet storm. She was talking about national service and how we need to expand national service in this country. She was down in Florida and had a very interesting and as a way that we need to have more people involved. We have so few people involved in the military and committed to this country in some way, but there more people could get engaged and involved if we expanded national service, and at the same time it could address some of the many needs that communities, particularly urban communities, have. So she has talked about child health. She has talked about child care as a proposal much different than Donald Trump's that would affect benefit working people. She has a whole host of proposals. The problem is that this election, there's been very little focus on policy. It'll be interesting if there's more of that tomorrow.
Well, isn't that more by her design than his, Teresa?
On policy?
No.
Isn't she the one?
I think she would love to have the debate be on policy because clearly policy wonk. I mean, that's...
But it's funny that we're this deep into the... You know, we haven't heard a lot about her Middle East policy. We haven't heard a lot about what she did when
she
was Secretary
of State.
It's
not like it's not available. If you wanted to know it, you can't find... There are no policy papers public from... Virtually none.
It's on her website, and she's giving it away to the enemy.
No, I'm talking about why isn't she? If she's talking public policy, and why hasn't she made an issue of all the things she's accomplished during her service as senator and secretary of state?
You can't choose what you make an issue. You can hijack the news cycle by tweet storming.
It's not that she's not giving the speeches.
Yeah,
it's
those
speeches
are out there.
Are not being covered. What? She's talking policy over and over again, but they're not being covered. Friday. Major policy speech on where we need to go as a country and a community.
We're saying two different things, though. I don't deny that she is saying all the things that she is going to do. Okay? I don't deny that, as is he. What I do deny, or what I am saying, is that she hasn't talked at all, really, about what she actually has done, what her background, what her background is in actually getting things done.
I've kind of heard that. Yeah. But the trouble is, when Trump gets up at a speech and he says outrageous things like, I Bill Clinton hasn't been faithful. I'm not even sure she's been faithful, you know, and makes these completely, unbased accusations against her. And he gets the TV time.
Right.
And she doesn't.
And
when
he talks
about policy.
Right. And when he gets up at 3 o'clock in the morning and from 3 to 5 a.m., he tweets about Miss Universe in ways that are not presidential. They're not so many different things, and certainly not presidential. And then she, the next day, gives a speech. Her speech is not going to get covered because what gets covered is the tweet storm at 3 a.m.
Well, and the line that
she gets just as much covered as he does. She's
not the policy.
Unless she faints, then she gets covered.
She could obviously look. And I'm not saying anybody wants to hear policy. Okay, I'm not saying the policy is going to get covered no matter who does it.
You know, right. I think also in this election, this is a bit of a problem because one of the things that elections do is sort out issues and sort of set a direction for the country.
Yes.
And this election has been fairly void of policy debate. But it's more about character and direction and where we're going. I think that's a bit problematic.
Let's just take a pause there. I'll give you your moment here in a
second.
We'll get back to it.
My point is, I think there has been a lot of talk about policy. And when you say it's devoid, and we can talk about it after break, I think there's been a lot about kind of global issues. Maybe not down to the level that you want to see in terms of detail, but I think there's been a lot.
Let's take a break. We will be back and continue our conversation after this.
Support comes from Barrington Stage Company, Pittsfield, Massachusetts, presenting Camping with Henry and Tom, featuring a bombastic Henry Ford, who wants to be president, a reluctant Warren Harding, who doesn't, and Thomas Edison, caught in between, through October 23rd. And from Spirit House, Amherst, Massachusetts, a family-owned wine, beer, and spirits retailer offering organically farmed wines from around the world, wine tasting Saturday afternoons, spirithaus.com. Saratoga Bridges, Ballston Spa, New York, a community resource for people with disabilities and their families. Supported employment day services and more. SaratogaBridges.org. And from H. House & Son, True Value Hardware and Just Ask Rentals. Woodstock, locally owned since 1932, featuring Benjamin Moore paints, tools, and materials for home maintenance. Behind every project is a True Value. HHoust.com.
There is a interesting article that we alluded to earlier in the program that Suzanne Craig wrote in the New York Times, a reporter for the Times, She went down. They have these small mailboxes that many people do because not many people get actual mail anymore, U.S. mail. So she went down to her box, and that's where the envelope came with the tax returns. She said, "My colleagues make fun of my old-fashioned devotion to my mailbox. It's about 30 feet from my desk among all the other third-floor employees' mailboxes, and I check it constantly, always hoping a tipster will have sent me some revealing letter or secret document. In Metro, we just get a lot of junk, but Friday, September 23rd, was different. I walked to my mailbox and spotted a manila envelope postmarked New York, New York, with a return address of the Trump Organization. My heart skipped a beat. I've been on the hunt for Donald Trump's tax returns. Mr. Trump, the Republican presidential nominee, has broken with decades-long tradition and refused to make his returns public. I've written extensively about his finances, but like almost every other reporter, I was eager to see the actual returns. The envelope looked legitimate. I opened it anxiously and was astonished. Inside, there were what appeared to be pages from Mr. Trump's 1995 tax records containing detailed figures that revealed his tax strategies. Almost immediately, I walked over to the desk of David Barstow, a three-time Pulitzer Prize-winning investigative reporter and my teammate in the quest for Mr. Trump's tax returns. He was on the phone. I waved the tax documents in front of him. He abruptly ended the call with whomever he was talking to. We cleared out the investigations team conference room and with our colleagues started drawing up a battle plan. They obsessed over the documents, the envelope, the postmark, the date on the postmark, everything. So, journalistically, Mike, what do you make of this particular story?
A lot of times, newspapers or investigative journalists get their first tips dropped over the transom. They come in the mail, and you know, without in some kind of anonymous way, you might get a phone message or whatever. It's more difficult to do that on the internet. I guess someone could be traced a little more easily on the internet. So, using the old snail mail route does work. You know, people give tips to the news media. They call and they say it'd be a good idea to stop by and ask about this. Happens all the time. This is no different. Somebody is motivated. It could be that they're motivated because they don't like somebody and they want to embarrass them. It could be that they're motivated by what they regard as an injustice and they want to correct it. It could be they're motivated by, you know, they just want to, you know, be a part of it. Who knows what their motive is? The reality is that you check into a lot of things. Most of the time, they don't check out. But in this particular case, they sent a reporter to Florida. They found the retired tax accountant who explained why the lettering was typed in alongside of the computer printout, because the program that they used to do these taxes in 1995 was not able to go that many characters, nine spaces.
They were concerned because the first two numbers looked like that it could have been doctored.
Right. And you remember during the, I think when George W. Bush ran the first time, Dan Rather released documents on CBS News that looked like validation that he was a draft dodger. Now, a lot of people have documentation that he was a draft dodger, but these were done in Microsoft Word, and that didn't really exist back in around 1968.
Oopsie.
So, you know, that's why they were enormously nervous about it, but they came to the conclusion that these were had every appearance and ended up being valid. And Trump has not denied that. I mean, that's not it. In fact, I think Giuliani and Christie yesterday validated that these are documents that are accurate. And for what it's worth, it gives you a glimpse but not a full picture. And it's not unusual for a newspaper or a reporter to get a tip.
Now, were you I was fascinated by how easily accessible the former tax accountant was.
Well,
I mean, wouldn't you think he would have had him vacationing in his Scottish, you know, hotel resort for a couple of months?
Well, the guy's in his 80s. He's living in Florida.
But with Trump people, I mean, I just amazing.
They said he was very reluctant to speak.
At first. He met them in a coffee shop.
Yeah, he finally said he would go out with them for a bagel. Also, there was also one line in the story that I thought was funny, but they in the return and in the letter, I guess, that Trump wrote, he kept on spelling the tax attorney's name. I guess it was
in his book.
Yeah, he kept on spelling his name wrong.
And I guess this guy had been his dad's accountant and was much more favorable to his dad than he was to him. But I thought it was interesting that the Trump campaign didn't have kind of a tighter hold on him.
Whoever did release these Rich, I'll ask you since you're the lawyer. Is that a violation of law if I have fiduciary trust for some client and I take them and make photocopies and mail them to the New York Times? Would that have been a crime?
A crime?
Yeah.
Well, to release someone else, certainly if it came from where some of us think it might, if it came from the IRS, that would certainly be
Of course, it was any official. Okay. But if it was somebody who worked within the Trump organization or at some other...
I don't think it would be a crime. Unless if it came from a lawyer, for example, the lawyer would have a fiduciary duty.
So, okay. His professional conduct. Right.
And perhaps from an accountant, too.
I think so. It'd be violating a fiduciary responsibility.
But, I thought the Times just spending an entire story patting itself on the back for having gotten something from what was probably from, like, the Clinton campaign or the IRS and just saying, wow, I can't believe this happened. And I can't believe that this guy just happened to be in the bagel shop in Florida.
I think they were telling a funny yarn.
Because it came through the mail, not,
Oh, come on.
I think that's the issue.
In the old days, you would never hear of a reporter bragging about where they got.
I've heard it a lot.
No, but you wouldn't read it in the newspaper.
But this is a part of
Mike,
actually,
you wouldn't
this
read
story,
it in the newspaper.
Interestingly enough, this They're story entire, by
books are written
yeah,
about
books
this.
Are written on Watergate.
Afterwards, not during it. Not during
it. This is 1995.
All the president's men came out within a couple of years.
This just happened
over the weekend, and they're already writing the story of how they
actually,
how they
happened
got
on
the story.
September 23rd. But it's part of the new thing that the Times is doing. It's actually a premium site on the New York Times website. If you are a customer of the Times and you pay to have the general newspaper, you don't get access to this. This is like you got to pay a little more. It's
I know
showing
that because I inadvertently bought a subscription trying to get the crossword puzzle, and I realized it was a subscription to the Times, and now I have to get rid of it or give it to somebody.
It helps you do your homework for the show, right? If nothing else. All right, we have about a minute before we have to take a break, but I am – so let me just get to a couple of the letters as we will fill in some well, not fill in
are we,
time.
Are we losing Mike?
We are going to lose Mike. Mike has to go run a newspaper, so we're going
to
let
Mike's,
him.
Mike's story, but
all right,
but all right. No. Go ahead. Go ahead. We'll talk about it in his absence.
All right. Like any good lawyer losing an argument, he changes the subject from one thing to another. This is about you, I think, Rich. How about those Republican debates? They developed as well. The problem is adolescent Trump with no focus, just personal attacks. Says Deborah. We got this. From Tessa, who says, I hate paying taxes, but as a citizen, I'm responsible for paying my fair share. It offends me that Trump doesn't feel a similar responsibility regardless of our tax laws.
Right.
If I saw Trump making a financial contribution or contribution of his time to make our country a better place, I could forgive it. He is not a public servant. He seems to be out for his own self-interest.
So Tessa doesn't take the standard deduction. She just goes and pays the full amount of taxes? Doesn't do anything?
All right, hold on.
Fair share.
We're going to leave
share.
It there. And we're going to take
share.
A news break.
I need
break
a number for what the fair share is.
After this, cut the mics. Good morning. Welcome back to the Roundtable panel. We did lose Mike Spain. Don't worry. He'll be back tomorrow. But he had to go run a newspaper, so we let him go. We actually let him leave the room. But Teresa Bourgeois is here, a communications consultant, and Rich Honan, corporate attorney. And we welcome both of them back. And we welcome your letters as well. Roundtable@wamc.org. Well, we've been talking a lot about the presidential candidates. Let's talk about the vice presidential candidates for a moment and preview Tuesday night's vice presidential debate between Republican Governor Mike Pence of Indiana and Democratic Senator Tim Kaine of Virginia. It pits according to the Washington Post, a former radio host who's described himself as Rush Limbaugh on decaf against a harmonica-playing former missionary whose aw-shuck style has spawned 1,000 dad jokes. All right. Teresa, you have experience in debates and working with candidates in debates. So why don't you tell us a little bit about that and what you think we should make of the tomorrow night's contest in Virginia?
So as background, I did many years ago in 1988 design and ran a presidential debate at the primary level in Illinois. It was a town hall meeting. And have been around a lot of debates. But I think that the interesting thing, Pence has spent 10 years in radio and television And mm-hmm. so I think that his, even though neither of these people have had a lot of, haven't had debate experience at this level, I think you can expect that he will, in terms of his ability to manage the debate because of his radio and TV experience. And both of them are...
I'm glad that gives you something.
You understand
it's
the
some
microphone.
Skill.
You
yeah,
understand
that's
the
good.
Microphone and the settings. I mean,
not
I think,
a complete waste of time.
No, I think
go ahead.
These things do, and they are both reportedly preparing. They said, like good Boy Scouts, they're preparing. So I think you can expect them both to be prepared. And I think that it may reveal a little bit about them, but one would guess a lot of the questions will really be about the top of the ticket and how they're viewing the top of the ticket. And we'll see. Pence has had a pretty standard answer in defending Trump, where he doesn't defend him on the particular issue. He just says broadly what a strong person he is and how good he will be for America. So we'll see if he has to get into some of the nitty-gritty. But, I mean, the thing that there hasn't been a lot of discussion about these two candidates, they're not that well-known, but Governor Pence is pretty conservative, right-wing, hard right guy. But they both have a lot of experience governing. It will. They're very, very different philosophically. So it'll be interesting to watch.
I'm not watching it. I think it's going to be boring. I just see, you know, two guys, you know, two boring guys talking about a boring job. I don't see it. Now, I'm sure people will watch it because, you know, it's important. But
well, I
don't see it.
Okay, I'm sorry. Just for a second, I have to.
But I agree.
Right,
I agree with
Teresa.
I agree with Teresa.
We need to understand them.
They
could both be president.
I'm just gonna let me take a moment, Teresa, because I just have to try to understand my dear friend Rich here. You'll read 800-page books on the most arcane subjects, which is fine. But why would you not be interested in this political aspect of? Because I know you as being someone who is very interested in the nitty gritty. This is part of the nitty gritty. Why wouldn't you be interested?
Because
in that?
It doesn't matter. First, as I've said. Teresa, I understand
it
what
matters.
You're saying. It matters.
I would think even out of curiosity.
Yeah, I'm not, and maybe that's what it is. I'm not curious anymore. You know,
okay.
I don't.
Have you written this one off?
No. Well, I know. I live in New York. My vote, my electoral votes are going to Hillary. Okay, I could vote for Gary Johnson or Jill Stein or you know or Donald Trump. I know where my vote is going. I don't have any representation there. I know who I think I know a lot about the candidates at the top of the ticket. You know, as much as any of us can know. It's not going to change my opinion. You know, a friend of mine said about the first presidential debate. I said, "Are you going to watch?" And she said, "Look, there's nothing anyone's going to say that's going to make me vote for Trump. There's nothing anyone's going to say that's going to make me not vote for Hillary. You know what? You know why do I care?" And I kind of get that. I certainly get that at the vice presidential debate. I think it's going to be talking point after talking point after talking point. It's just going to be a question of how jocular both of them can be and just, you know, make themselves as likable as possible.
So when you have Mike Pence, who has made it very clear that he believes that human activity is affecting our global climate, and meanwhile Donald Trump says that global warming is a hoax, don't you find it interesting, or at least if that question comes up, of how he will answer that?
No, what's it? No, I don't.
Do you, Teresa?
I am anxiously awaiting how he will answer that. And as with the whole host of other questions, and I think it's important to understand who these people are, what they stand for, what they bring, what they would bring to the office. And, you know, if in fact, because either of them could become president.
And I don't mean to be morbid. We're talking about nearly 70-year-old people who are running for president of the United States.
Clearly, with Trump, you know, one thinks that Governor Pence would have a fair amount of influence because Mr. Trump has no experience governing.
Right.
And I think governing is a skill. And Governor Pence was a member of Congress for six years? He was a member of Congress. He rose to the...
Six terms, I think.
He was. But a very, very, very conservative member of Congress. I mean, this is a person who joined in the effort to hold up, you know, we have a hurricane coming and hope everyone does well through that. But after Katrina, he held up funding on a principle of not wanting to spend more government money. Didn't want to allow it to go through unless you cut other funding. Now, I think people should know that. And what about the differences between him and Donald Trump? I think that, you know, there's a lot to learn from both of these candidates. I mean, Tim Kaine, he's held, he was a city council member, he was a mayor, he was a lieutenant governor, he was a governor, he's a U.S. senator, he has a broad experience governing, he has a background, he's a lawyer, but he spent his time working on housing discrimination as a lawyer. I mean, right. I think that's important. It says about the kinds of issues that he would work on. He's focused on workforce development issues, and he's focused on foreign policy issues. Pence brings a fair amount of foreign policy experience to the table, which I think would be helpful for Republicans to know, given his work in the Congress. Now, again, it's policy experience I would disagree with, but it's comforting to know he has the experience. Well, I think you learn a lot from about these people, and it's important.
Well, I think either of them would make a fine vice president. Either of them would be, you know, would be helpful to the extent that they were ever asked to help. But I don't see it having a lot of effect on the ultimate question. And you know, I think what you're going to see, I can see how you, Teresa, as a debate expert, I think you're going to see some really good debating. I think you're going to see Pence probably really walking a very fine line and probably doing it very skillfully, okay, but not necessarily very substantively.
Well, I think he'll have to not answer all those questions. And I also think it's interesting to see, think about what these two bring to the ticket in terms of the swing states, right? I mean, certainly with Kaine on the ticket, that almost locks in, essentially locks in Virginia. He's beloved right there, right? But also, I think he helps in places like Ohio, working class, you know, him campaigning a lot in Ohio. He helps there where she needs help. I think he helps in Florida because he speaks Spanish. He's, you know, and can help with the Latino constituency. But I also think that Pence helps calms down the money people. You know, he seems to have calmed down, and he has tight relations with the Koch brothers, but also the Christian conservatives. You know, he can help with the Christian conservatives and such. And so I think it's interesting from a political perspective what they bring to the table. But I also think the policy questions are interesting. And how does Pence, you know, not answer the questions like climate change?
The mail seems to be a bit mixed. Brendan in Albany says Rich kind of has a point in this election. Is anything the VP says going to sway anyone? I don't see it happening. Mary says either of the potential VP candidates could become president. The VP debate is the only real chance, and this is a good point, the only real chance we'll have to see both of them.
Exactly right.
Because they usually, you know, they're scuttled. Their coverage is not
right
out. So it is one of the chances that we have to see these individuals. We'll get to a couple more letters. And did you want to say anything else about the debate? Okay. All right. Thank you for your input, Rich. I appreciate it. We go to...
Well, I think the moderator, I think it's important to note, first Asian American moderator.
Yes, from ABC?
Well, no, she's actually from CBS.
CBS, I'm sorry.
And also, she's with the digital side of CBS, so this will be the first time. She had been a White House correspondent, but it's the first time that an anchor is from the digital side of the news. So that's another breakthrough. And as we're talking, also the location of the debate has a lot of historic significance.
Right,
in Virginia.
In Farmville, Virginia, because it's the home of civil rights changes around education, Brown versus Board of Education. So
maybe Rich, says Susan, is afraid that any knowledge that might be gleaned from watching the VP debates might impinge upon his firmly held beliefs? Question mark. I can see where knowledge could be dangerous for his belief system. people mean, but okay. Thanks for this discussion today about all the candidates. Teresa is fantastic.
Well,
ask that reader if she read From Black Lives Matter to Black Liberation, which I have, okay? And if there's anything that challenges my belief system more than that book, which I read over the last week or so, I'd be hard-pressed to find it. So I'm open to the ideas. I got to repeat what I've been saying since we started this. It doesn't matter. There's a Republican is not going to win the presidency probably for the rest of my lifetime because of the electoral map, because of whatever biases you want to introduce, because of the positions that the Republicans have taken on social issues, which I think have no part of the national debate. So it's theater. But it doesn't matter.
You want to take that one on, Teresa?
Well, I think it's possible for Republicans to win, and I think it's still possible for Trump to win. Obviously, I hope not. I don't think that would be good for the country. But I do think that the Republicans need to think through the type of person that their nominee is. I think it's the person that makes his or her way through the primary, the Republican primaries, is not necessarily the person who can make it through the general election. And I think that's what you're talking about. But that's a problem that the Republicans need to face. But I think this campaign has raised a lot of important questions about what's going on in our country, and there's a lot that has to be healed. And then to belabor the vice president's point for another moment, if I might, I think you saw with Joe Biden, and also you saw with Dick Cheney, that vice presidents have, I'm not a historian, so I don't know if it's a more important role, but certainly they have taken on a more visible, more important role. And I do think it's important that we understand the background of our vice presidential candidates, not just because they are heartbeat away, but also because they are taking a more active role in governing.
20 seconds left.
Yeah, and clearly where you have what I'll call a non-legislative president. So where you have a president who's maybe a governor or, like Bush, or a president who didn't have a ton of legislative, like Obama, you know, who had been 2 years.
Or Trump with no governing experience.
So
he would need Pence.
I absolutely agree with that.
Rich Honan, Teresa Bourgeois, thank you very much for being with us. Both have you back very, very soon. Thank you so much for joining us. We'll continue with the roundtable on WAMC.